Isaiah chapter 34. This is a Old Testament Bible story, except the cool thing about it is it's about stuff that is not actually happened yet. It's a Bible story that takes place in the future. And so there's a lot of those in the Old Testament. There's a lot of stories in the Old Testament prophets, and they talk about a lot of things that are going to take place that haven't taken place yet, or that took place after they were prophesying. And this is one that I've just always found particularly interesting. There's a lot of really cool stuff, but this chapter is one that Josh and I were talking about a couple weeks ago, and so I thought I'd go through it this morning. Starts out this way. It says, "Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people. Let the earth hear, and all that is therein, the world, and all things that come forth of it." So he's calling for everything to listen up, because he's got something important that he's going to say. "For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter." So he's saying all the nations need to hear and listen to what he's about to say, because all of the armies of all of the nations, the indignation of the Lord and his fury is upon them, and he's going to, at this time, he's going to have utterly destroyed them. That's something that's never happened. God's never called all the armies of all the nations of the world together and destroyed them, but that is going to happen at the Battle of Armageddon. And so that's what this chapter is going to start out talking about. "Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood." It talks about this in numerous passages. It says it many different ways, but all of these armies of the world are going to come together, and they're all going to be slain by the wrath and the fury of God. Jesus Christ is going to return, and is going to, in fire, just wipe them out. And there's going to be so much blood from all these dead soldiers that it says it's going to melt the mountains with their blood. It's going to be rivers of water, just like water will run down and it will carve out valleys. There's going to be so much blood flowing down off of the mountains from the destruction of the armies that it's going to carve out valleys, and the mountains will be melted. "And all the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down as the leaf falleth off from the vine, as a falling fig from the fig tree." So it talks about that if you read in Revelations and other passages. It talks about how the heavens are going to be rolled together, and the powers of the heavens are going to be shaken when Christ returns. So that's what he's talking about here. So this gives us a timeline of the things that he's going to talk about after this, which are pretty interesting. It's amazing how much detail, when you start looking at these Old Testament prophecies, and we'll see in a minute, there's a ton of really interesting detail. He's not just saying, okay, this is kind of going to happen, Christ is going to come back, and a bunch of people are going to die, but he actually gives a lot of specifics. And so it's a story that is going to unfold here. But this dates when it's going to happen. This is going to happen after Christ's return, the things that he's going to describe after this. "For my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, it shall come down upon Idumea and upon the people of my curse to judgment." So God has chosen a particular location where this is going to take place, where all the armies are going to be gathered together, and he's going to bring his judgment in that location. He calls it the land of the people of God's curse. We know that there's a certain people God has chosen that he's put his blessing on. He chose the nation of Israel. But he also chose a certain people to curse, and that was the children of Esau. "Jacob have I loved, and Esau have I hated." And so the people of God's curse is Esau, or Edom, and that's where the judgment's going to take place. It says upon Idumea. Idom, or Edom, is the name for Esau. So that's the area where this destruction is going to take place. "The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, and with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. For the Lord hath a sacrifice in Bozrah, and a great slaughter in the land of Idumea." So it's comparing, and it does this in numerous passages there in the Old Testament, it's comparing this slaughter of these armies that's going to take place to a sacrifice. It uses that kind of language. It talks about, in some passages, it talks about like the blood being put on the altar. But here it says that it's like the fat that they would burn in their burnt offerings. It's like the blood that they would shed of goats and lambs and rams before God when they had the tabernacle, when they had the temple. This is the same. This is God's looking at this in a similar way. He is bringing judgment on these armies of the earth, and he's looking at the destruction and the blood of these people as if it was a sacrifice to himself in the land of Idumea, the land of Edom. And the unicorn shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls, and their land shall be soaked with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. Now some people read that and they say, well, the Bible's talking about mythical creatures because it talks about unicorns. But if you read what it says, the unicorn shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls. If you look up every time, it's like about, I don't know, five or six times, it talks about unicorns in the Bible. Almost every time, it's paralleled with some sort of cow, either like a bull, a bullock, a calf. It's not a unicorn. Is not a horse-like creature. A unicorn is a certain kind of cattle, certain kind of cattle that had probably two horns, but they were very similar. They were so that when you looked at it from the side, you only would see one, and so when they were drawn in from the side view, they would only look like they had one horn, and that was maybe why they were called unicorns. We don't know for sure, but when he's talking about unicorns, he's talking about a very strong wild ox, essentially. That's when you look it up, you can see in scripture it consistently uses the term unicorn in relation to other words like bulls and bullocks and calves, and that give that picture. And their land shall be soaked with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. So again, he's using this language that you would use about a sacrifice. They would sacrifice bulls and calves, and their blood would be poured out. And he said, the land's going to be soaked with blood. You're going to take a step, and blood is going to come oozing up out of the ground because the ground is soaked with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. The dust is going to be have all the fat and the gore from all these armies that were destroyed mixed in with it. For it is the day of the Lord's vengeance and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. So this is when a time that God has chosen that he is going to take vengeance, and he's going to pour it all out at once and judge all the nations, all the people that have been stood against the city of Zion, stood against his people of Israel. He's put up with it for a long time. He's been long-suffering, and now is the time when he gets to judge them, and so he does it in a fantastic fashion all at once. And the streams thereof shall be turned to pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. So not only is this land going to be destroyed just by all of the blood and gore that's going to cover it, but the judgment is going to be by fire also. And it says the streams thereof shall be turned to pitch, and the dust thereof to brimstone, the land thereof shall become burning pitch. So this land of God's curse, which is the land of Edom there, is going to be completely destroyed. It's going to be useless for anything. You can't go and farm there. It's turned into fire and brimstone, and it's like oil oozing up out of the ground that's on fire all the time, and it's burning pitch. It shall not be quenched night nor day. The smoke thereof shall go up forever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and ever. So it's like there's no reason to even go there. It's such a horrible place filled with fire that you wouldn't even go and pass through it. You just like nobody takes a trip to go. We're just going to go on a field trip and go see that. It's just such a horrible place. No one even goes through it. But the cormorant and the bittern shall possess it. The owl also and the raven shall dwell in it. And he shall stretch out upon it the line of confusion and the stone of emptiness. So it's going to be a place where all the wild birds dwell. They shall call the nobles thereof to the kingdom, but none shall be there, and all their princes shall be nothing. So when Christ sets up his kingdom, they're going to call the nobles from all the different kingdoms of the world. They're going to call them from Egypt. They're going to call them from Assyria. They're going to call them from Damascus and all these different places. And they'll send a runner out, and he'll go to the land of Edom, and he'll realize, wait a minute, there's nobody there to call. This land's been completely destroyed. The palaces have been wrecked. It's a land filled with burning pitch, and there's everyone has been killed. There's nobody there. There's no rulers. There's no nobles. And so they'll call the nobles thereof to the kingdom, but none shall be there, and her princes shall be nothing. And thorns shall come up in her palaces, nettles and brambles in the fortresses thereof, And it shall be an habitation of dragons and a court for owls. So wild beasts will live there. The wild beasts of the desert shall also meet with the wild beasts of the island, and the satyr shall cry to his fellow. The screech owl also shall rest there and find for herself a place of rest. There shall the great owl make her nest and lay and hatch and gather under her shadow. There shall the vultures also be gathered, every one with her mate. So it doesn't sound like a very fun place to be or place to visit. It almost sounds like a horror movie or something. All these, you know, owls and wild beasts and vultures are there, and nobody goes there. And that's where there'll be those birds will nest and where they'll raise their young. Verse 16: Seek ye out of the book of the Lord and read. No one of these shall fail; none shall want her mate. For my mouth it hath commanded, and his spirit it hath gathered them. So, this is really interesting. It says, seek out of the book of the Lord and read. So he says, when this happens, when this takes place, they're going to have the book of the Lord. That's interesting. There's going to be just one book that's going to contain, like they used to have a bunch of different scrolls with all the different things. This is prophecy. There's going to be one book that the whole scripture is going to be contained in one book. It's going to be the book of the Lord. And after Christ returns and has judged all these people during the millennium, they'll have the book of the Lord still. And they'll take it, and someone will go and read, and they'll go over by that land, and they'll say, okay, I'm gonna look and see. Yeah, is the cormorant there? Yeah, and there's a bittern, and there's the owls. Their nests over here, and here's the vultures, and they'll be able to see. Yeah, no one of these shall fail; none shall want her mate. So they'll be able to see that it is exactly like Isaiah prophesied it. And he hath cast the lot for them; in his hand hath divided it unto them by line, and they shall possess it forever. From generation to generation shall they dwell therein. So God took the inheritance that was for Esau, and he gave it instead of giving it to his people. He said, they're the people of my curse. I'm destroying them because of their hatred for Israel, because of their hatred for Zion. And I'm going to bring my judgment, in fact, on all nations of the world on that land so that it will be utterly destroyed forever. And instead of giving it to the children of Esau, I'm going to give that land to the owls, and I'm going to give it to the vultures. And they're the ones who are going to inherit it. Now, so that's a story about what's going to happen. And it goes on, and he talks much more. In fact, he contrasts that with what's going to happen to Israel. But think about that for a minute. Esau was the firstborn. Esau was the firstborn of Isaac, who was the heir of God's promises to Abraham. He was the heir of that on all the world, he would be blessed in him. And yet, he despised his birthright. He didn't, you know, he didn't care about it. He could have had a double portion of the inheritance of Isaac, which was an inheritance from God. And he sold it for, you know, one meal. And because he despised it, God said, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get any of it. He would have still gotten one third of it. Instead of getting a double portion, he would have gotten a single portion of it. But he had ended up with nothing because he rejected God. He didn't follow him. He didn't care. He didn't try to conform to God's plan. And so he got absolutely nothing. His land, his inheritance, was given to the owls and the vultures and the cormorants and the bitterns, to the wild beasts instead. So then it contrasts it with what's going to happen in other places of the world, what's going to happen in Israel. First part of chapter 35, it says, the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as a rose. So there's lots of places in and around Israel that are desert, other areas. But all those places are going to rejoice and blossom as a rose. They're going to be turned into a beautiful, wonderful garden. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon, they shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. So, people that inherited, that followed God, Israel, the people that inherited that, God is going to bless their inheritance. Even though it was a desert, he's going to turn that into a beautiful land. So, when you look in the prophets, you can see, excuse me, you can see many other times where it tells a similar tale, or tells the same story, but gives you different details each time that it tells it. And you can go to, for example, the book of Obadiah is all about Edom and why they were judged. And it kind of seems odd. I mean, God, you know, here's this guy has one central prophecy that God gives him. You know, he's not like this prophet that said all this other stuff. He got like one thing, and it was about Edom, which, you know, what's the big deal about that? Because most of the Bible prophecy is about something that's important, that's like going to be fulfilled in the time of the end, or maybe has a dual fulfillment in the past, but is still going to be fulfilled in the future. But you see, Edom is significant because it is going to play a part in the at the time of the end. And so that's why Obadiah saw fit to that's why God saw fit to prophesy about that through Obadiah. But if you take and you look in Isaiah and look in the other Old Testament prophets, there's a lot of interesting stories like that where it talks about interesting details that one day we're going to be able to take the book of the Lord and we're going to be able to see that everything has been fulfilled exactly like that. And I don't know, that's going to be really, really awesome. So that's what I have for now.